Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you'd like to listen to this podcast ad-free and before it goes on general release, please consider becoming a patron from just £3 a month, or you can give a one-off donation via Acast Supporter. Both links will be in the episode description. Welcome back to Conversations with Annalisa Barbieri. That's me. This podcast is about unresolved grief from childhood. Although I think things are getting better, it still seems that, as a society, we struggle talking about death. It's partly why I'm so keen to do podcasts about death and grief. But we are doubly like this where children are concerned. Losing a close family member is hard whatever age you are, but when you're a child, it can feel especially precarious. Children are very good at taking the temperature of the room, and if they feel that the adults have ownership of the grief, or if they're not allowed to talk about the person who has died, well, that grief can go inwards. I see it in the letters I get, but I also hear it from the therapists I speak to every week. Sometimes adults present with problems such as depression, inexplicable anger, inability to sustain a job or a relationship. Not always, but sometimes, there's a significant grief in their past that's gone unacknowledged. They often brush it away with words such as, "But that was ages ago," or, "It doesn't really bother me, I'm okay." Grief is a trauma, and unspoken about, unprocessed, it can entrench deep into a child's and then an adult's psyche. Many people don't realise that some of the issues they have as adults can be traced back to their unresolved grief in childhood. In this episode, I talked to UKCP and BACP registered psychotherapist and researcher Mandy Gosling, who, as we shall hear, has personal experience of early bereavement. We'll hear about its impact on her and how she finally started to process it and how she now helps others. Mandy specialises in helping adults who are bereaved as children. We talk about how and why it's so important to allow children to process grief and to talk about how they feel, not just at the moment of loss, but far, far beyond it. You will find this useful if you've recently suffered a bereavement and have children in the family, or perhaps you lost a loved one as a child and feel now is the time to start to unpack how you feel. Mandy, hello and welcome. I wonder if we could start by you telling us a little bit about your personal story and why unresolved grief is so important to you to talk about and try and help people who suffer from that.
Hi, I'm Lisa. It's nice to be here. I was 9 years old when my mum died. She was 36. She died of breast cancer, and that was in 1973. And on reflection, I think my whole world changed at that moment. Like, nobody ever talked about childhood loss or grief. You just kind of got on with it, went back to school and carried on. I don't think it was really considered an important topic for children in the 70s. Things are much better now, but there's still a way to go. And then it's kind of hard to take myself back. I think of myself as a psychotherapist, but I'm still a bereaved child. This is quite a common experience that I hear, is that we can remember the night it happened or the day it happened, but then the rest of it is quite fuzzy. And I'm no exception. So I do remember the night my mother died and I was taken to a family member's home. I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know that she was dying. I didn't know that she had died. And I didn't know until 3 days later when a great aunt told me, not even my father told me, and it was just, "Mummy's gone to heaven," and that was it. You just kind of carried on. And I do remember having questions, but there was nowhere to really place it. On reflection, looking back, and obviously I didn't know at the time what was happening to me, but I just sort of shut down and survived, really. You go into sort of survival mode, and it's about, how do you get through that? How do you carry on when a child just does?
Did anybody ask you how you were doing at the time?
No. I mean, not that I recall. They may have. My grandmother was very pivotal. She would come up once a week and kind of do the housework and change the beds. But the rest of the time, I'm an only child, so it was just me and my father. And for about 2 years after my mother died, I slept in his bed. I think my attachment was so disrupted that I didn't know what else to do. So you go into that complete survival mode of being close to the adult around you.
Yeah.
My father was a difficult man. So he wasn't really available, and he was a man of his time as well, I suppose. And so it just never got mentioned. It was like my mother was there 1 minute and gone the next, and we'll just all carry on, shall we? And that's how it was dealt with back then. And then interestingly, my father sold the family home and left when I was 18, just to add a little bit more into the pot. And so
left where?
He moved away. He decided he was going to move away and start a life on the South Coast. And I was...
And where were you before
I was eight. Well, I was 18 at the time, so I still lived in the family home that my mother and him had had. And I recall that being really significant. I was 18 by then, and I felt it really, really hardly. I went to live with my grandmother. But that was, I think...
It was another loss.
It was another loss. And then my grandmother died when I was 21. So then I had another loss. So,
oh, wow.
So whilst, you know, it was an original loss, there were other losses that have also impacted my life and how my unresolved grief manifested, because all of those losses were significant, but probably amplified because my primary caregiver had died. So to be able to then work through the other losses was even more difficult.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you in a little bit about how it manifested. I think that, especially back then, children are often the invisible victims of grief.
Yeah.
I know through experiences I've had, nothing as traumatic as yours, but people don't ask. They don't really know what to do with children. I think they think it will just go away, that it will just make itself better. I am so sorry for you, because I also think 9 is a really, really tender age. You're not a tiny child. You're very aware of your surroundings. I mean, my mum went to hospital. This is nothing in comparison to what you went through. When I was 9, I didn't know she was coming back. Mm. And I still remember the feeling. And in fact, a lot of issues developed from there, coping mechanisms. And like you, it's very acute. Certain memories are very acute and the rest is quite fuzzy.
Yeah.
But the point is, I remember being 9. And if my mum hadn't have come back, I sort of had a peek into what that might be like. The house seemed very without a heart to it, even though my dad was lovely. But, you know, also he was of his generation. I mean, Mandy, you're a psychotherapist now. If you could go back, or, you know, had a magic wand, how would you have liked things to have been different in terms of, obviously you wouldn't have wanted your mum to die, but if she had, how would you have liked the people around you to be different?
Well, I have another memory, and I think this is very interesting when you think about how children might deal with a loss and certainly a significant death in their life. I can remember the words, or roughly these words of, "Oh, she's not upset, so she obviously didn't care." But of course, as a 9-year-old, I was hurled into a place which no small child should be hurled into, and I was in trauma. As I know now as a 60-year-old, I would have liked it to be talked about. So like, you know, what the charities might do now with children or what supportive families would do is to talk about what had happened, how I felt, so that I could have at least processed some of it at the time. Of course, you can't process it all as a child because different life events will bring different pieces that need processing, but at least have started to process that. And I think that would have helped the middle part of my life to be a little bit more stable because it would have been talked about, and we know talking about it helps it be within the system in a more healthy way, as opposed to it being kind of locked away in a box. And then, you know, one day the jack in the box kind of comes out and says, here, have this. And of course, I'd be forever grateful to my grandmother because she was there for me in the way that she knew. And she was born in the early 1900s, and she came and she cooked once a week. But there were even practical things. My mother had always done everything in the home. So as a nine-year-old, I had to learn how to fend for myself almost, and almost take on the role of the woman in the home when working out what you're going to eat and how do you do all the practical things that my mother had done. People do their best with what they have, but I think, you know, certainly from what I know now with, you know, the remaining parent is vital in the child's ability to manage the loss, for sure.
So I think really the first thing is to allow the child to talk about it.
Yeah.
Whenever they want. Because children, I mean, I've always been told that children grieve in a slightly different way. I don't know what your thoughts are on that. But it's been explained to me by grief counsellors that adults wade through grief. So they go through great periods of time of grieving and then come out periodically and they get back in, but children puddle jump, so they can be playing Lego and suddenly say, where's mummy or where's grandma who has died? Is that your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with some people which, if they've been in a sibling setup, they will look at their own grief and will see the difference in their own, their siblings' response. You know, let's go and put cartoons on the TV and, oh well, mum's dead. There's that kind of need to not actually focus on it when you're a child and you don't have the capacity to be able to deal with it, and it will kind of come in and go, and where are the sweets, and oh, let's talk about whoever's died, and then go back into their own way of being in life. I don't work with children, but I hear it, say, from my adult children of how they dealt with it at the time. And thinking about my own grief as a child, from what I vaguely remember, I never talked about it. My mother was never talked about at all. And I think it needs for a parent to encourage that as and when, and being very attuned to the child to be able to do that, so that when the child needs that space and that security to be able to do it, they can. I guess, I mean, you learn just from watching how the adults are around you. And if nobody's saying, are you okay? Or, you know, I'm sure they were thinking, was I okay? But there's no opening of those doors. It doesn't happen.
My mum died a few months ago, and she was a very present nonna grandmother. So I talk about her quite a lot. My dad died in 2016, and we always talk about them. I say, oh, that reminded me of nonna. Do you remember when nonna and nonna used to say that?
Yeah.
I mean, is that the kind of thing you mean, that my parents were in their 80s and 90s? I think the loss of a mother when you're nine is a different thing. It's very primal. But would you have liked someone to sort of mention your mum or talk about her or say, your mum used to do this? Do you remember how that felt, not to be able to talk about her?
I think not at that point, I think, because you just automatically go into just survival. I think it's only years later that I wanted to know who she was, what she was about. And of course, by talking about it at an early age, the memory gets reinforced and you can keep the person in your hearts and minds as you go forward. So that would have been comforting as someone much later down the road, because I would have understood her more. Now, I've obviously done work on myself and done lots of things that has helped me try to connect with her and discover the woman that she was, but I've had to do it from a long way forward to go back into it. I have two grandchildren and my eldest granddaughter is 4, and I talk to her about death. I have a necklace that I wear and I go, and who's having this? Lily. And when is Lily having it? When Nana dies. We bring that into conversation so that when, hopefully, when she's much older, we'll be able to hold that much better. And I think it's important to speak to children today. There is more available, for sure. But I think for me as an adult, and for all the people that I work with, it's a big missing piece for them.
But I know that you've said that if grief isn't, I don't really want to use the word resolved, even though it might be the title of this, because I'm not sure you can ever really resolve grief. No. I always think of it as something you fold into your life and carry with you.
Yeah.
But for the sake of argument, if grief is sort of unresolved or you haven't even begun to process it, how can that manifest in adult life in the sort of the people that you see?
In many, many different ways. There are nuances and complexities to it, dependent on variety of factors. What was life prior to the loss? How was it handled at the time? And then what life presents you with afterwards? How it manifests when people come to see me, they present as an adult, but within them lies a frozen child. It's frozen at the time of the loss, and my work with them helps them to unfreeze and do all the things that perhaps weren't attended to at the time. And that looks like grief work and finding themselves, building their self-esteem, because it is considered one of the most traumatic experiences that children can have. Losing somebody in their early life, so primary caregiver. I would also put sibling into that, because I think also when you lose a sibling, you potentially also lose the parent. Not for any fault of anybody, but it's such a traumatic event. So to lose somebody like in your close-knit family, and that lays in the system as a trauma. So that then has a lifelong impact.
Can you give me some examples? Because I was looking at an old problem I'd answered in The Guardian, and the reader wrote back into me saying thank you. And she had failed to tell me that she'd lost her mother when she was very, very young. And it was almost like she didn't think it was important. And yet that piece of information made sense. It was like the key to all her problems. But she hadn't thought to tell me. She was presenting with all these issues and problems, symptoms if you like, but hadn't really said, because she was very, very young when her mum died, but it suddenly all made sense. And so what kind of things might someone present with? Could it be things like they can't settle in a relationship? Do they lose trust? I mean, I'm sure it varies, but is there anything that you see again and again and again that you think, have they lost someone very young?
Well, it does vary. And obviously people seek me out because it's my speciality, but also for some bizarre reason, sometimes people come and when I do an assessment, I take a full history and then I can see where it is. How it can manifest is, you know, it gets frozen in time, Annalisa, and then it goes underground, and then it might be when they're a teenager and, well, I just want to cope with it and keep going. And they just keep going. And then all these sort of maladaptive coping strategies come in. The root cause is the grief, but you go through difficulties forming relationships, very, very common one. Because, of course, when you look at relationship theory, it's all impacted by our primary caregivers and our attachments. It was one of my main issues. I really found it difficult to be in relationship. Sometimes an adult who's bereaved as a child can feel quite mad because we do things that I completely understand and probably another adult who was bereaved as a child would understand. But we behave in ways that have been impacted by the original loss. So Sometimes it might present as addictions, it will present as anxiety or depression. Another common one is health anxiety. So self-esteem, because the lack of mirroring that's not available because the people around them are in their grief, so you don't get that kind of reinforcement in the system of who they are. So self-esteem is really compromised. Education is compromised, so people don't achieve their potential because it depends when the time is. I see slight different, actually. It may be just be with the people that I've worked with, but I often find if it's a slightly older loss, so teenagers, they will sometimes throw themselves into schoolwork and that will be their solace. Whereas like for somebody like me, it just becomes completely disrupted. So that sort of pre-secondary school, because, well, teenagers deal with it slightly differently than, say, younger children. There will always be nuances and complexities, and it's not a single trauma event even, because there may be other traumas that have happened, or there may be other things going forward from that life that then impact the self-structure even more. There are sort of common presentations, and then we then look at how that impacts family situations, how it impacts how you parent. Then you go into sort of more psychiatric diagnoses now, like prolonged grief disorder, PTSD. PTSD is a big one. So if someone knows that they've got grief and then they come to me, and often they will be in a very heightened traumatic state. I use a grief model to explain to them what's happening to them. And
what is that grief model?
I particularly like the dual process model. So this is the model which has the restorative function and then the grief function, and that's the Straub and Schoep model. For me, it makes perfect sense, because as a bereaved child, we go into complete coping strategy. So we go into restore. We will not look at our grief. Now, we will go along in the restorative operation for as long as we can, because we will not want to look at our grief, because no one's opened that doorway and it's too painful. It's too painful to even consider. So we don't even think that that is part of the issues that we're experiencing. But then what happens is at some point, something will throw you off that restoration. Something will just come in. So I've seen it that COVID came in, and people that were perhaps coping by being with other people or work, and that sort of fell away. That was their coping strategy. That was the way they regulated themselves. And that was no longer available. So there's nothing left in the tank to anchor them apart from external factors. Or people might have a life event that will then activate it. But you can then no longer cling on by your fingernails onto this pillar that you have adapted into for the whole of your life. I certainly was in that, definitely. So then what happens is you polarize to the opposite end, which is the grief pillar, the grief orientation. But what happens with ABCs is that's not just grief, or let's have a bit of processing. It hits you like a tsunami. You fall away. You have nothing to hold. There's no anchor anywhere. So you're in grief, and that's where it's traumatic grief and it's PTSD. And these are delayed grief symptoms. And it's as though you are going back to that point in time when it happened, and the intensity is that much.
It sounds like if it hasn't been processed, it puts you in quite a precarious state. And then the slightest thing, and it might be something that you really don't think about, just tips you over the edge, because you have no inner resilience.
That's right. Because you've generally compromised the developmental process, which is all the building blocks that we have throughout our life, that we to and fro from in our family of origin, that provides the safe container of which we can develop ourselves up to the age of 25, when the development process is considered ended. And so all these building blocks of life have not been stacked up. So there's no anchoring. And that's what happens. Childhood grief leaves an indelible mark. And we have to be able to understand what that might look like. And it's like, oh, that person's really coping well. Are they? Or are they just coping in a way that they've learned how to cope because they've had to without the foundations? I didn't come to do my grief work till my late 40s. And in fact, I had 4 years of therapy initially in my training. I never talked about my mother once. I never even thought it was a thing, but it is a thing.
So what unlocked it for you?
When I decided to do my master's research, and I was toying with, well, what would the question be? And I remember thinking about the question of what I was going to research, with the long-term impact of parental death and how to understand that. And I can remember feeling it in my body. It like hit me like a brick. And I can remember thinking, oh, no, I definitely don't want to look at that. Why would I want to look at that? And so even at that point in my life, after 4 years of therapy, I was still not ready to do it. But I was ready to do it. And I spent 2 years in very deep personal processing and researching that was very difficult, but probably the best thing I'd ever done, because I then had to face it. It was brought to me. And that's why I do the work I do, is from that. It was like, okay, it can be different how I feel. You know, I don't have to have anxiety. I don't have to constantly be on high alert. I can perhaps be myself a little more without all these cloaks that I'm carrying that are not because of who I am, is because what happened to me.
And did people around you notice a change?
I think so. My life today is much calmer, much more peaceful. I notice it in my inner workings. I don't have the constant chatter of anxiety. I'm just more comfortable. Does it ever come in? It does. It doesn't ever go away, but what you can do is, when it's so overwhelming, is get it to a point where you understand. So in a lot of my work, I help people learn about how it can look so that they might be prepared, depends where they are in their life, of, you know, that potentially has a moment where it might activate it, or help them learn about relationships, because I'm also a relationship therapist as well, to help them learn that what happens if you're bereaved and how that manifests in an adult relationship, how people parent when they've lost a parent. So there are lots of these sort of everyday life activities that we take for granted that someone who was bereaved in early life potentially struggle with.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I know you said that it's different, but I'm just wondering about the relationship and the way the parenting. I mean, I'm imagining, and I could be wrong, that someone who's been bereaved as a child might be quite an anxious parent. Is that typical, or would they go the opposite way?
Yeah, so there's another layer to this. Now I ask in my assessments, I ask, were any of your parents bereaved? Because I'm also interested in that information, because that's then the second generation and those are the children of the parents that were bereaved.
Mm.
If I think about my parenting style, I was an anxious parent and I was probably quite protective. And also, I wasn't quite sure how to parent, but you do work it out and you do the best you can. And before that time, I hadn't done the work on myself, and there would be things I would change. One of the things I would definitely change, because my mother was never talked about, I wished I had talked about my mother to my children, because also they don't know her. I barely know her. But if I'd had that from the beginning, I would have talked about her. Like, so we have people that have died in our family, and we talk about them, you know, their paternal grandmother. We talk about, it was kind of her birthday on Sunday, and I remember I said, no, it was Gran's birthday today, and do you remember this? And we talk about it ongoing, and so they are able to have that relationship with her. I do feel a sadness that I was not able to bring my mum into their life in some way.
Well, it is. I mean, what do you remember about your mum?
What do I remember? She had the most engaging smile. She had the most beautiful teeth, which my grandfather had. She was an anxious woman, and she hoovered a lot. And
I think a lot of women of her generation hoovered a lot.
And she was petite, and she loved clothes, and the clothes in her wardrobe stayed for many years. And to just feel close to her as a child, I used to go into the wardrobe and I used to put them on. And she had evening dresses and they were all set out in different sections. She loved me. I absolutely can feel that now. And I never thought I'd be able to feel that. But I think with learning about myself, going through a process where I was actually to be more in connection with her, I have felt much more in the last probably 5 years than I've ever felt. And I feel very grateful to be able to have done that. I don't have memory, but I have physical sensation.
Yeah.
And that's comforting.
And maybe after all this time, you're able to feel that and it be comforting and not painful.
Yes, it's occasionally it's painful, and I'm always expect the unexpected, because I think with grief we never know what might just touch it.
I mean, I think grief is the OG of emotions, to use a bit of teen speak. For those of you that don't know, that means the original gangster. I think it's the emotion that people are terrified of. But I always say to my readers, you cannot body swerve it. Sooner or later, it will hunt you down.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important to start the process of it. So what was your mum's name, Mandy?
Jackie.
Mandy, I'm keen to know a bit more about the process that you talked about when you help your clients to unfreeze. That was a very powerful image, that some of their development has been frozen. So I'm guessing they come at certain grown-up situations as the child. How do you help them unfreeze? How do you help them defrost?
Have a big hairdryer. It's just really attuning with them and seeing where they are. I would tend not to go to grief, unless somebody presented with, say, traumatic grief. I would never go to the grief first, because coming off that ledge of restorative function into grief, you have to do it very gently and very carefully, because if you bring it in too quickly, you can re-traumatize. Now, obviously, at some point, it has to be processed, because you're trying to get that into the autobiographical memory of these were the moments that happened in life. You know, first off, it's being able to strengthen who they are, understanding themselves as a person, looking at their qualities, how you build their self-esteem, because that's the foundation in which we navigate the world, through an anchored place and an regulated place. I would work more in that way first before anything else. because what I don't want to do is reactivate it. And when I do reactivate it, I want them to be able to hold it themselves alongside me. And that's the important part about doing work with adults bereaved as children, because often they feel incredibly isolated and alone. And so it's important that they now have somebody who can ask them how it feels, or can guide them, or can give them space to talk about it. So the unfreezing process is very gentle, because otherwise you freeze too quickly. You want little drips of things as opposed to a great big pool of stuff, so that it is not over traumatizing. I will keep trying to bring it back to sort of the root cause, potentially. You know, so for example, if someone's struggling in relationship, I will help them see, like, for me, I'm an anxious attachment. So in all my relationships, you know, I would be clinging onto somebody, they would barely be able to leave the house because I could not tolerate that in my system. So I would help them see that it was a different time and place, reality checking, being able to regulate them, but also say, of course you would have this, you know, to normalize these experiences. Because I think we can feel quite crazy at times. I've done some completely crazy things, but I can be comfortable with that now because I'm a bereaved child. I was always going to do those kind of things. That's what happens to us. This is what happened to you, and it's okay. But now it is different. And so to help them see differently, they are an adult today, and that they can have successful relationships, or it depends what they present with. So if it's an addiction, or if it's a self-esteem, we would build the self-esteem. If it's addiction, we'd look about what is it they might be not able to express. They might not be able to express something. And I'm looking for all the maladaptive coping strategies.
So what might they look like? So if someone was listening.
So it might be drinking. It might be being anxious. It might be constantly thinking about their own health. It might be overparenting. How have you learned how to cope? Well, I've learned to cope by blocking it out. I've learned to cope by just attaching to people. I've learned to cope by not attaching to people. I've learned to cope because I can't ask for help and nobody's there for me. So we're trying to get everything in balance rather than polarizing.
I see. It sounds also like, in a way, you're helping them do the work that wasn't done for them when they were a child and they lost someone. Those building blocks we've spoken about, that resilience, that inner toolbox, whatever you want to call it, that was kind of lacking.
Yeah.
I mean, what would a really healthy scenario look like? So if someone's maybe listening and you have children in the family and someone's died, be it a parent or a sibling, what might they think of doing that would help the child?
Well, by keeping conversations open, Annalisa, and attuning to the child. And sometimes that can be difficult when the family is in their own grief. From what I understand now, the most common thing people say to me is, I wish somebody had talked to me about it when I was a child. Now, that might look like for the whole of their life, because, okay, the time of the loss, I don't know, maybe 2, maybe 9, maybe 15. So you would talk about it at that time. But also, all of those children will become an adult. And when you become an adult, there will be new challenges to face. So when you leave home to go to university, when you get in relationship, when you maybe have your own children. So it's not just a one-time conversation. It is throughout their life that this will leave an imprint and that will be activated along the way.
How do you keep the conversations over? I mean, do you just let them talk about it? Do you bring it up?
If I were an adult of a bereaved child, I would attune to them and I would ask gently. Sometimes they don't want to talk about it. Sometimes they want to talk to somebody else. sometimes you would be aware of their behaviour. Are they shutting down? Are they being really clingy? Because children will let you know, not necessarily through a verbal way. So you have to decipher the language of the child. Now, so let's just say you start maybe gentle conversations when they're smaller. As a teenager, quite often teenagers don't want to talk about it, but they might want to talk about it to their friends, or they might belong to one of the charity's group scenarios. Or I'm doing some work with a charity called It's Time, which work with teenagers and young adults. So there are online places that they can go to. But it starts with the family, that it doesn't just shut off. It's attending to the need of the child, as in all parenting. Only the child will be able to express that, what they need.
And I guess talking from scenarios that I've heard or read about, a couple of things that have been brought up. One of them is very clear that they weren't allowed to talk about it, that it went silent when they talked about the person who had died. So they soon learn it was not the done thing. The other thing I've heard is that the adults were very upset. So the child felt they couldn't also be upset. Somewhere along the line, the grief is expressed in the family, but in a way almost, I say this tentatively, but almost too much. So the child learns that their grief will just add a burden to the adults around them.
Children will always look at their parents and take the cues from the parents. Now, I don't think there is an exact answer, because it is very difficult. If there is a death in the family, people will be upset. I think it's giving children permission to have emotions and that it is okay. Can tears be too much? No, I don't think so. We're trying to change society in this. I think it's a very complex, broad brushstroke now of how do you solve what we've all learned over many, many years. Mm. I would encourage people to give children permission. It is okay to feel sad. It is okay to feel angry. All the main charities who work with children's grief would be able to probably best advise. And I would certainly say that would be something for parents to be able to lean upon, and how to do it. So unresolved grief for me is it's not been talked about. It's not had space. It's not had expression. And it's still stuck in time. That would be what I would see with the people I work with. There was not a place to be able to speak about it. Their parent or sibling died, and then it was never talked about, because, as you rightly say, children go into that protective function. I've got to make sure mum and dad are okay, or I've got to make sure the remaining parent is okay, because I have to survive this. And my chances now are slimmed down. So I've got to be really extra good and careful and alert that I do the right thing.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, sometimes I have people write to me, or I see people in my everyday life and they've lost a parent, they're adults, or they've lost someone, and they just feel nothing. They just feel numb. And it strikes me that if you're numb, you can't process. So why might someone be numb in their grief, and what might they be able to do about it? I mean, do you thaw eventually and start to feel things? Is it an adult survival response that's maybe a bit different to that of the child that we've been talking about?
Well, numbing can be a grief response. You're going to feel numb when somebody you love dies. There is a sort of natural adaptive process of grief that will go through a variety of phases that, you know, maybe carry on, and then you may revisit again. I'm not sure there is a judgment on numbing. I think you are wherever you are, and whatever your phase you're in is to be wherever you need to be. I went to a trauma conference in September, and someone who talks about resilience made a big statement on stage and said, not all avoidance is bad. And as a therapist, I kind of thought about that. And it's like, oh, we always want to go picking around in everything. We want to open it up and think about what's going on. And I can consider that, and particularly with the dual process model of grief and the restorative function. And I thought, actually, not all avoidance is bad. Sometimes we actually need to avoid it and let our systems do what they're designed to do in the natural adaptive process. So it's
which
not,
is what?
Which is to be with it and to not be with it, and to be with it and to not be with it, and to oscillate between those two polarities of restorative and to be with grief. And you might be in one a bit longer, but you might, I would certainly, if you're in a numbing phase, go and find a therapist that has a good understanding of grief, that you can see where you are in your process. Because in my experience, you can walk through it. You can't walk around it, but you can walk through it. But that will take time and effort and courage and patience.
So I guess numbing is okay as long as you're not actively avoiding something. Is that right?
Sometimes we need to actively avoid something because our systems can't cope with it. It's to be curious where you are. And then if you go, well, I'm actively avoiding it, am I missing something? As a therapist, I never force anything. I allow people's psyches to guide me where they need to be. And sometimes they don't need to be with their grief. Sometimes they need to go and be with their friends. Sometimes they need to go out for a walk and just experience that, because that will then feed their system that when they are strong enough, they can be with their grief. Now, if it then starts getting into more clinical presentations where people are chronically depressed, then that requires professional help.
Yes, but I suppose that's what I mean, because the fact is, in order to process, you do have to unpick something, unpack it, whatever verb we want to use. I know people in real life who have never really, I think, unpacked their grief. It's not my place to tell them. I don't. No. But I do wonder where that's coming from, given what we've said about grief being such a big emotion.
Yeah.
And it does seem one that people like to avoid. Talk about adults now and adults who may be bereaved.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. Sometimes you do just have to stop. You don't have to throw yourself into it all the time. And we all need a bit of respite.
Yeah. And it's keeping your system in as best as balanced state as you can. So this lovely kind of dance between the two happens so that the system can tolerate it enough. Because if you avoid it, as you say, it will come back and bite you, or it will manifest in other ways, maybe in difficulty functioning in some way. But of course, if you're just fully in your grief, you can't gather yourself that you can live as you perhaps want to. So there is this, you know, where am I? There's this sort of self-inquiry into our process. If people are in that, or professional help that will kind of help you navigate this grieving process. As humans, we all have a natural adaptive process, but it's how do you navigate that? Avoiding fully is not great. Being in grief fully is not great. Sometimes I work with people that are very much in their grief, and I kind of have to pull them out and kind of drag them out of that hole to kind of say, right, let's do some restorative work. So I would ask them to just consider other things as opposed to even talking about any of their grief, because I need to get them into restore so that then we can go back into it a bit more gently, as opposed to falling down the deep, dark hole that you can't drag yourself out of.
What would restore look like? Would you be asking them different questions about different aspects of their lives? What would that look
like? Yes, yes. Sort of the general life stuff. What are other things in their life apart from grief? Their family, their work, their qualities, how they are in life. Because I think sometimes when we're in our grief, we forget also who we are. Because if we're consumed by grief, we forget that we have got a job, or we did go to the gym, or that we really like the leaves on the trees today, or there are other facets to us apart from grief. And sometimes when we're in that all-consuming place, it's very difficult to see.
Mandy, listen, thank you so much. I have one last question to ask you, which is, you have 5 minutes with your 9-year-old self. What would you say to her?
Oh, Annalisa. Oh, I don't even know how to answer that. I'm just going to go with my hunch, really. I would say to her, it's going to be difficult. I would say to her, trust. I would say to her, you're stronger than you think. Find the people that will support you. I would say to her, start the journey home back to yourself. Because that's what I feel I have done, is that I have journeyed back to myself and I've picked her up and I can carry her forward with me now. I feel she's a part of me. And that's all the inner child work that is beautiful. And that's the unfreezing, is for the adult to be able to be with their bereaved child and hold them and carry them forward and bring them into the present day and attend to their needs. So I had to strengthen my adult self in order that I could attend to my 9-year-old self. And that was the work. And that's the work of really being an adult who's bereaved as a child, is pick them up, hold them, listen to them.
Mandy, thank you ever so much.
Thanks, Annalisa.
Many thanks to psychotherapist Mandy Gosling. If you'd like to read more about her work, please visit her websites, abcgrief.co.uk or mandygosling.co.uk. There are 3 bereavement charities, 2 that deal specifically with children, winstonswish.org and childbereavementuk.org. Also, if you're an adult, don't forget about Cruise. I'll put all the links in the episode description. The series is produced by Hester Kant, the artwork is by Lo Cole, and our music composer is Toby Dunham. If you'd like to read my column in The Guardian, it's every week in the Saturday magazine.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, this is Annalisa. I started doing this podcast because it's an idea I really believe in, so much so that I decided to put my money where my mouth is and self-fund the project. I really want to keep releasing this podcast for free, so if you enjoy this episode, a way you can help is to visit our Acast supporter page and give what you can. You'll find the link in the episode description. Thank you.